भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नमामिश्वराय कृष्णपश्चाय भूतदे श्रीमद्भक्तिवेदान्तस्वामिनित्यनामने नमस्ते सरस्वतदेव गौरवाणी प्रचारणे नरविशेष शून्यवाणी पाश्चात्यदेशचरणे श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य भगवनितानंद श्री अद्वैत जगदाथ शिवसिद्धि गौरवृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे श्रीमद् भागवत चैप्टर 25 वर्स 6 एषां श्रिया अवलुप्तानां कृष्णेन आत्मा पिता आत्मनाम दूनुता श्री मद स्तंभम मासूम नायत संशयम एषां श्री अवलुप्तानां कृष्णेनात्मा पितात्मनाम् दुनुता श्रीमदस्तम्भम् पासुं नायत संशयम् एषां श्रियावलुप्तानां कृष्णेनात्मा पितात्मनाम् श्रीमदस्तम्भम् पासनायत संक्षयम् एषाम् of them Shriya by their opulences Avaluptanam who are intoxicated Krishnena by Krishna Admapta, fortified. Atmanam, whose hearts? Dunuta, removed. Sri, based on their wealth. Mada, being maddened. Stambam, their false pride. Pasun, their animals. Nayata, bring. Sangshayam, destruction. Translation, to the clouds of destruction, King Indra said, the prosperity of these people has made them mad with pride, and their arrogance is backed up by Krishna. Now go and remove their pride and bring their animals to destruction. Purport is clear from this verse that the residents of Vrindavan have become highly prosperous simply for protecting cows, since Indra wanted to destroy their so-called pride based on wealth by killing their animals. Well-tended cows produce large quantities of milk from which come cheese, butter, yogurt, ghee, and so on. These foods are delicious by themselves and also enhance other foods such as fruits, vegetables, and grains. Bread and vegetables are delicious with butter, and fruit is especially appetizing when mixed with cream or yogurt. Dairy products are always desirable in civilized society, and the surplus can be traded for many valuable commodities. Thus, simply by a Vedic dairy enterprise, the residents of Vrindavan were wealthy, healthy, and happy, even in the material sense, and most of all, they were eternal associates of the Supreme Lord Krishna. Translation, the prosperity of these people has made them mad with pride, and their arrogance is backed up by Krishna. Now go and remove their pride and bring their animals to destruction. Elsewhere in the Bhagavatam, concerning the 10th canto, Vishnu Chakravarti makes the common observation that the inhabitants of Vrindavan think that they are ordinary people. And sometimes they address themselves as being very ignorant and attached, etc. For instance, in the story of after Nanda Maharaj was taken away by the servants of Varuna, and then Krishna dove into the river and rescued him. Then Nanda Maharaj came back and then told the inhabitants of Vrindavan that, "I think Krishna's a little special. Actually, he's not an ordinary child, because when we were under the water there, I saw that all the devatas were paying their respects to Krishna, and they were praising him with great elaborate verses and worshiping him." And immediately he said, release me." Then the devatas agreed. So Krishna is not an ordinary person. He's someone very, very special. So maybe after all, he is Supreme Lord. So then they thought, "Well, we are just ordinary cowherd people. And how is it possible that Krishna could be born in our family? But maybe we should ask him for something, since we're so caught up in this material world and attached to our families, etc." So of course they asked to see the spiritual world at that time. But anyway, they were thinking, "Oh, we are just ordinary people caught in Maya and household life, etc." So this is the way in which the inhabitants of Vrindavan themselves think. We are just ordinary people. We go out and tend the cows, etc. And from the external point of view, when other people see this, they also think the same thing. Because the Rajabhasis themselves are thinking like that. So their activities and their mentality are so convincing that all the other people that see them also think, "Oh yes, they're ordinary people," because of the way they act. So we see here Indra also is thinking that they are ordinary people as well. And it's not surprising, of course, because even the inhabitants of Vrindavan themselves think they're ordinary. Here Indra is making all these observations about the pride of the inhabitants of Vrindavan. And as I mentioned the other day, actually, the observation is true from the normal point of view in the material world. If people get wealth, then they become proud. And when they become proud, then they won't listen to scriptures or wisdom from intelligent people, etc. They ignore all injunctions of Shastra, etc. So this is a common problem in the material world. So from that point of view, Indra is quite correct in his observation here. Here he is talking about their wealth and addressing this as Shri. Shri, of course, has two meanings. One is, of course, material money and wealth and all sorts of wonderful comforts of this world. The other meaning of Shri, of course, is spiritual. And that means Lakshmi or Radha, the Shaktis of the Lord. They're also called Shri, which means the Lord himself is possessed of all spiritual wealth in the form of his Shaktis, his consorts. And they represent all sorts of wonderful powers of the Lord. So therefore the Lord actually is the epitome of all wealth, etc., because all Lakshmis are around him. And of course in the previous verses, in the purport, it was said that actually Lakshmi, no, it wasn't this, it was another purport, that the Lakshmis of the spiritual world are there. So therefore the Supreme Lord is the wealthiest of all. And a reflection of that spiritual wealth is the wealth of the material world. It is a poor substitute, of course, because in the spiritual world, that Shri gives rise to Ananda for the Lord. In other words, we have Radha and Krishna, and that combination is pure bliss. And similar with all the other consorts and all the other associates, it gives rise to pure bliss. And of course in the material world again, people try the same thing. They try for a material Shri. And they try to get their bliss that way. So they may do it through wealth and properties and vehicles and houses and clothing and marriage and family, etc. This is the Shri of the material world. And this is the ambition of most people. We will become happy if we got all of this Shri, all this opulence. Okay? And of course we have the big example of Ravana. He was so courageous and foolish that he tried to actually take the real Lakshmi, Sita, the spiritual Lakshmi, but that could not be. So it brought disaster upon him. So anyway, even the material Lakshmi, people have to strive for that in the material world. And if they get material opulence, then they feel very, very proud of their achievement. We've achieved so much wonderful things by our own endeavors. This is their feeling. So once they got that opulence, along with that opulence comes their power, and then of course their pride. And when one has pride, one does not listen to other people. Pride means we will do what we want, and we don't listen to the advice of others. So that is what pride does to a person. And that is caused ultimately by acquisition of all sorts of properties, etc. So here the inhabitants of Vrindavan also are actually very, very wealthy in one sense, because their wealth is measured in terms of their cows. Now, of course, the king's opulence is measured in terms of his land possessions and his gold and his soldiers and things like that. But for the and of course wealth for the Brahmana is something else, and wealth for the Vaishya, of course, is the according to the profession what they have accrued. So the profession of the Vaishya is one of the professions is herding the cows. So if you have lots of cows, then you're considered very wealthy. So Indra was observing that Nanda Maharaj and his friends had all accumulated plenty of cows who were also very, very well-fed and giving abundant milk. So then the natural conclusion is, oh, they're very wealthy, therefore they've stopped this sacrifice because of their pride. And not only that, they've been inspired and encouraged in their ignorance by that little boy Krishna. He's encouraged them to do this also. And because they are so bewildered, they listen to a small child. And of course in the previous verse, Indra was criticizing Krishna as being just simply a young boy, foolish boy, who was preaching all sorts of false philosophies. So in this way, from the external point of view, yes, the assumption of Indra is very correct. People in the material world do become puffed up, and they will do everything wrong. They will take the wrong advice on whimsical, on their whimsy, and then do all sorts of things opposite of what should be done. So in this case, what did they do? They stopped the sacrifice to Indra. And this is, generally, this is the prescription of the scriptures. One should do yajna. And Indra should get his share. And particularly for the cowherd people, they need rain, and therefore Indra gives rain. So it is natural, according to the normal Dharma Shastra, that they should do all of this. And if they don't, then there must be some problem. They must have been overcome with ignorance. And so this is his conclusion. Yes, they've become too wealthy, now they don't listen. So that is the observation of Indra. And therefore Indra takes this radical move to pour down all this rain and destroy their wealth, which is the cows, and therefore they'll be put in a very humble position again. When all the wealth is taken away, then they become humble, and then they'll follow Dharma again. So that also is, we could say, natural. When people are overburdened with their karmas and they lose all their wealth and everything, then they tend to surrender to the Supreme Lord. Just as the four types of people who surrender unto Krishna, one is the person who is in distress. Because he cannot solve his distress problems, he surrenders to the Lord. Mm-hmm. Or because he's in want of money and doesn't have it, he surrenders to the Lord. So that also is a correct observation. When people lack something, then they tend to worship the Lord and follow Dharma, etc. And when they get too proud of their opulence, when they got so much, then they give up the worship. So this is natural. So in one sense, we can say he is intelligent in his observations, etc. And his prescription. Okay, destroy the wealth, and then they will lose their pride, and then they will begin to follow scripture again. This, of course, is also the psychology behind karma. Why does the Lord have karma and make people suffer? Is it because the Supreme Lord likes to see the jivas suffer in their material body and getting all the karmas? No, it's not that he likes to see them suffer. But the nature of the jiva with the material body is such, unless he gets suffering, usually he won't pay attention to anything. And therefore, punishment has to be meted out sometimes. So in that sense also, we see small children sometimes, unless you punish them, they don't listen. They won't listen until they get punished. So that karma is also a punishment sort for people who don't listen. Jivas that don't listen, then they have to suffer. But it is not irrational and it is not illogical meeting out of punishment. It is very just in accordance with the crime committed. And it is very equal. It is very equal. It is not in any way prejudiced. So therefore it is just in that way. So people that cannot listen and cannot listen to good advice, etc., then they have to undergo that suffering. So it is Krishna's law also that those who become proud and sinful, etc., then, by the law of karma, because of that sin, they will get everything taken away from them and they won't have to suffer. So in that sense, we can say that Indra is actually quite wise in his observation of this and in the way he wants to do things. Yes, take care of all the wealth away, then they will be corrected. But the big mistake, of course, is that actually the cowherd man and Krishna are not ordinary people of this world. But they look very much like it. So this is the big mistake that Brahma also makes. They cannot understand the exalted nature of Krishna and all the devotees in Vrindavan and even the cows. They cannot understand that they are far superior to Indra and Lord Brahma, even the devotees, much less Sri Krishna. Everyone is much superior. So that is why it is sometimes said that the pastimes of Krishna are very confidential or very secret. Very few people can really understand. And why? Because Krishna is Manusha Rupa. He is very, very human-like, more human than Rama or any other avatar that comes in a human form. So though Krishna is avatari, Krishna is the source of all avatars, and therefore outstanding, nevertheless, his role is such that he doesn't even look like God. And no one can detect him. Very, very difficult to detect him. So this is the actual nature of Krishna. And this is actually what makes him supreme. He's so full of power, etc., that he doesn't have to show his power. He can hide his power completely. And that bliss that the devotees get from relating with Krishna and his sweetness, this is 100% satisfying for them. And he doesn't even have to show powers. So in this way, Krishna is very, very difficult to understand. And therefore, Indra makes this mistake. And he's thinking in terms of ordinary people. They look like ordinary people. Krishna looks like an ordinary person, and therefore they are all bewildered, and I will have to take proper measures to punish them so that they will correct themselves and become humble again and obey Dharma. So his intention perhaps is correct, but the premise is faulty. The people are not ordinary people, and Krishna is not an ordinary person. They're all transcendental. So therefore, the nature of Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan is such that everybody looks very, very ordinary. And they look as if they're bewildered. But actually, they are the most exalted of all devotees. So this has to be understood. And even people like Indra cannot understand that here, we see. So therefore, he makes this very, very big mistake. And misunderstands Krishna. So of course we can say not his fault in one sense, because it's very difficult to understand Krishna. Even the great sages and the yogis, etc., also make a big mistake about Krishna and cannot understand him. So ultimately this pastime is here to illustrate the exalted nature of Krishna and the people of Vrindavan, all these cowherd people. In spite of the fact that they look ordinary, they're actually beyond everything. And it is not foolishness that impels the inhabitants of Vrindavan to listen to a small boy, though under normal circumstances it would be. Why would people give up dharma and tradition in favor of the suggestions of a small boy, which looked like a concoction? Instead of doing a sacrifice and worshipping a devata, we will worship a hill. Sounds funny. But why? It is not out of foolishness. It is out of the highest love and devotion, the highest prema, that they simply, anything Krishna wants, they will do. Their very life depends on Krishna. In prema and higher sentiments like sneha and raga, the intensity of love is such that the very existence depends upon the object of love, Krishna. And therefore, any move of Krishna, any word of Krishna, any desire of Krishna, immediately, they want to fulfill the desire, they want to do something for Krishna. And that gives them life. And if they cannot do it, they feel completely devastated. Their life completely depends on Krishna, and they're willing to sacrifice everything for Krishna, even their life. That is the intensity of their love. So Krishna says, okay, we should do this, 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 and immediately, yeah, we will do it. We will obey Krishna. So it's a type of illusion in a sense, because it's not very rational, from a rational point of view, but it is impelled by that great love, that great prema and sneha and raga. They will simply do anything Krishna wants, even if it sounds the most foolish thing. If it is for the satisfaction of Krishna, they will do it. Yeah? So this, of course, shows that the desire of Krishna is beyond dharma. Normal dharma is there. And, of course, even Lord Chaitanya says, this dharma and varnashram system, karma yoga, though it is recommended in Bhagavad Gita and Karma Kanda section of the Vedas, still it is inferior, external. We don't care for this. And Krishna says, Sarva Dharma Paricharya at the end of Bhagavad Gita. So in that sense, this pastime illustrates that also. That though the dharmas are there and worship of Indra and the devatas is okay for some people, for the people who are dedicated to Krishna, there is no sin incurred, there is no fault if they give up all of these things. And if Krishna, especially if Krishna says so, what is the fault if they give up all these dharmas? Because it is the will of Krishna, the desire of Krishna. So the desire of Krishna is higher. And similarly, if Krishna tells Arjuna to fight, and then Arjuna says, well, we have to kill the elders, and it's a sin to kill the guru. But if it's Krishna's desire, then that overrides the sin of killing the guru, etc. Krishna says fight. That is a higher principle. So if one simply fights because Krishna desires, fine. No sin. No sin incurred. So persons who have that type of spontaneous attraction to Krishna, that they're considered superior. They don't consider a dharma, sin, non-sin, hellish punishment, etc. They only consider what Krishna wants. What is going to please Krishna, that's all. As that story with the gopis. The gopis were, what is it, Narada Muni came to the, gopis and said, oh, Krishna has a headache, so, Krishna wants something from you. And then he said, okay, what does he want? We'll do anything for him. And then he says, well, Krishna says, the only thing that will relieve my headache is that I get the dust from my devotee and I stick it on my head. So then the gopi said, okay. And they said, here's the dust. And they took all the dust from the feet and gave it to Narada Muni. And he was shocked. And he said, well, you know, if you put your dust on Krishna's head, that's a great offense and you go to hell. And he said, well, that doesn't matter. If Krishna gets pleasure out of putting the dust on our dust on his head, then we will do it. If that's going to cure his headache, fine. You don't care if we go to hell. So there's no consideration of the normal rules and regulations when there's a desire of Krishna and one wants to satisfy that desire. That is the highest principle of all. So therefore Krishna says, okay, give up the worship of Indra, and instead we will simply worship that hill Govardhan. And then they do it. And there's no sin from that. There's no fault in them at all. Of course, we see that when they did this, then Krishna assumed the form of Govardhan and he devoured all of the offerings. So actually all the offerings went to Krishna anyway. So it wasn't a hill after all, it was actually Krishna. Of course, Govardhan is also the devotee of Supreme Lord. So therefore worship of the devotee, worship of Krishna is higher than worship of Indra or any of the devatas according to the principles of Dharma. So there's no loss by doing that in any case. So ultimately they are not overcome with pride and listening to a small foolish boy. They are overcome with the bewilderment of prema. That is all. And in that prema, of course, there is bewilderment also. There is moha also in prema. The devotees often become bewildered by prema and they don't know what to do. But it is out of love. So out of that love, they may forget to do this or that or forget dharma or whatever. But that doesn't matter. Because it is all according to the principle of pleasing Krishna. So they're not puffed up with love and bewildered by pride, etc. They are bewildered only by that prema. And what is the Shri that they have? That's not ordinary Shri. It's not ordinary cows. Because the cows in Vrindavan are Surabhi. And those Surabhis are not material Surabhis either. They're spiritual. Just like the ground, the bhumi, is Chintamani. Now, of course, there's a material Chintamani also, but this is a spiritual Chintamani. The earth and the stones and the dust and everything is all fully satisfying. Whatever you want, you get from it. And similarly, the cows, you can get everything from the cows. Similarly, you can get everything from the trees. Desire trees are there also. Everything gives everything you could desire. But what do the devotees desire? They don't desire material wealth and material jewels and material gold and all this. They're not going to ask a desire tree or the cow for give me a, you know, some gold watch or some, you know, tape recorder or something like that. Whatever it is, it's only for serving Krishna. Somehow they should please Krishna. So anything they ask for from the desire tree is simply a desire to serve Krishna better. That is all they want. That's their only desire. How can I serve Krishna? In other words, ani abhilashita shunya, devoid of other desires. Bhakti should be devoid of other desires. Abhilasha. But one desire must be there. And that is the desire to please Krishna. So that is what they always want to do. And that, of course, is their wish. May we always please Krishna by our service. So that's what they wish for when they're going to ask the Chintamani or the desire tree or whatever. It's only how can we serve Krishna better. That's all they want. So the cows are not ordinary cows. They are spiritual cows. So the wealth of the Brajabasis is not material Shri. It is all spiritual chit. And therefore, in the spiritual world, if one has all this opulence, there's no such thing as pride attached to that. Because all of that, all those possessions are only for service of Krishna, by definition. No one can get to the spiritual world with possessive instincts and pride, etc. So because they have zero pride and zero possessiveness and only want to serve Krishna, they're in the spiritual world and they're given everything. They have all opulence because they don't misuse it, and they have no chance of misusing it. It's only for Krishna. That's all. So they have everything, every wish is fulfilled for them, but their wish is only maybe serve Krishna more. So therefore they're qualified for the spiritual world. So their pride is not the pride of the material world at all. Whatever pride they have is only also in service of Krishna. So therefore the words of Indra are not correct for these inhabitants of Vrindavan. It is correct from the material point of view, yes, but not for the inhabitants of Vrindavan. So his solution, Indra's solution, is okay, we will destroy the cows and then they will become completely humble as a result, and then they will return to Dharma. That's his plan. But of course, anything in the spiritual realm cannot be afflicted or destroyed at all. So the cows cannot be destroyed, the people cannot be destroyed, even Govardhan cannot be destroyed. Nothing can be destroyed in Vrindavan by normal means. Just as the soul cannot be destroyed by, you know, fire, water, etc., any of the weapons. So nothing in the spiritual world can also be affected. And similarly in the Brahma Mohana Leela, the Brahma apparently stole the cowherd boys and the calves. But then Acharya say, no, Brahma cannot do that. He cannot touch these people or the cows because they are transcendental. And Brahma only has material powers. So how can he kidnap them and put them in a cave and put them to sleep? He can't do that. So actually he didn't touch them at all. These were Maya cows and Maya cowherd boys, replicas that Krishna produced for Lord Brahma to put him in illusion. And the real ones were not there at all. So Brahma cannot touch the inhabitants of Vrindavan, the cowherd boys or the calves, whatever. And similarly, Indra also cannot do anything to them. He can pour down as much rain as he wants. It's not going to affect them at all. So therefore, he can never destroy anything. And therefore, instead of destroying their pride, Indra's pride got destroyed. He's thinking, I can do this. I can kill them. But no, he cannot kill those cows, and he cannot disturb the people at all. They are all from the spiritual realm. So therefore, everything, his whole observation and solution completely fail, because this is actually part of the spiritual world. Okay, question?
We're speaking about karma on this stage. If there are obstacles in the devotee's path, what affects the Krishna consciousness? Are they seen to be karma related?
Well, there's different types of obstacles. Some are karma related, some are aparad related. Now, just karma means from previous lifetimes, effects are coming on us now, circumstances. For instance, you may get sick, that may be caused by karma. And you're getting a problem now, or you lose your money or something, or what, you have poverty, then that is karma. And it may be an obstacle to your service. You don't have any money, then you can't do your service properly or something, or you get sick, you cannot do your service properly. That's the obstacle due to karma. But then obstacle may be due to aparad, or maybe become very disturbed in devotional service and cannot concentrate or whatever, have various problems. That may not be due to karmas, it may be due to aparads. And that can also disturb devotional service, decrease faith, etc., make one unsteady, and gradually destroys bhakti, etc. So one have problems in devotional service because of that. Another obstacle is the effects of the results of bhakti itself. That is that by doing bhakti, then Bhakti and Mukti also become available to the devotee. Huh? Bhakti and Mukti like to serve the devotees, and they come with folded hands and say, "Can we serve you?" Hmm? So when one does devotional service, then, especially in the beginning stages, one will get all sorts of material things. So that's not due to karma or punya, that is due to the bhakti itself. Maya Devi likes to serve the devotee and give him things. So you get all sorts of nice things in devotional service. But then, if you enjoy them, and you don't use them for the service of the Lord, that becomes an obstacle also. An anartha. So that is an obstacle due to bhakti itself, or we say incorrect use of the results of devotional service. So there can be various. And of course, another obstacle we can say is not exactly, it's like karma, but it is actually due to lack of intelligence. In this lifetime, we can get immediate results from our activities, which are bad. That is, we do things to excess. In this lifetime, we get immediate results, which may be bad. For instance, if we have the wrong diet, then we may get sick. So here it mentions eating, it's nice to eat dairy products, but if you eat too many, then you may get stomach ache. So then that's an obstacle to devotional service also. It's not karma, but it's just our immediate lack of intelligence and our desire to eat that causes it. So there's various sources of obstacles in devotional service. They're also called anarthas of sorts. They are different origins, that's all. Now the karmas, and all of them of course, are wiped out by proper devotional service. Karmas are destroyed. Parabdha karmas, aparabdha karmas are all destroyed by bhakti itself. But not all at once. They go step by step, one by one. So therefore we will still experience karmas in the performance of sadhana bhakti. But as one goes higher and higher, then less and less and less, less karma effect. And finally the only effect is aparad effect. The remains of previous aparads will affect you in bhava stage, but no karmas anymore. So that's the only obstacle at that stage. Shamananda, he was, there's a long story there, you can read the whole story. He became a great devotee in Orissa, actually, and started the whole almost a sampradaya there, Gaudiya sampradaya. There's a whole story about his, he was actually, was Hridaya Chaitanya's, I think, was his guru, and he was in Sakya Rasa. Then he went to Vrindavan to study under, I think, Jiva Goswami and others. And then he had a vision of Radha, etc., and found her, anklet. And he touched his forehead, and then he got that tilak on his forehead, etc. Anyway, the result was he turned into Madhurya Rasa as a result instead of Sakya Rasa, and his guru got angry with him and came from Bengal to chastise him, but finally he accepted him that it was inspiration. It wasn't that Jiva Goswami was, stealing him and converting him or anything like that. And he wasn't concocting it. He was actually had a genuine, realization. So then he became quite famous, and along with Narottam Das Thakur and Shamananda, Srinivasacharya, they were considered the three principal preachers, second generation after Lord Chaitanya and his associates had disappeared. They were considered the next generation. So, and they did a lot of preaching. So Narottam Das was in Bengal and all around there preaching, and Srinivasacharya also, and Shamananda was in mainly Orissa, doing the preaching work. And his influence is still felt there.
What happened to the real cowherd boys?
Oh, the real cowherd boys. There actually were three sets of cowherd boys. The Maya ones that Krishna made and gave to Lord Brahma to put to sleep. Those are just Maya ones. And then there was the ones that were expansions of Krishna himself, and they went back to Vrindavan, and their mothers and fathers and were all took care of them, and those cowherd boys were actually Krishna, and the calves also were Krishna. And then the real ones, they entered into the Nitya-lila, because Nitya-lila is also going on also, so it was uppercut. So they joined the Nitya-lila at that time for 1 year. So therefore we had three sets of cowherd boys and cows. So that was not only bewildering to Brahma, that was triple bewildering for Lord Brahma, because he couldn't figure out what happened. Okay. Hare Krishna.